Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington policymakers, DC insiders, and AI experts who are challenging, debating, and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. It's Tammy Haddad with the Washington AI Network today in Paris at Station F. We've just wrapped up the AI Action Summit, and it has been pretty wild. Just heard from Sam Altman, Yann LeCun, and many of the other stars here in France as the world comes together to try to figure out next steps in AI. Ina Fried gave us a really good wrap-up. She has done incredible coverage here, and I hope you enjoy these interviews and enjoy hearing directly from the AI Action Summit. Tammy Haddad with the Washington AI Network here in Paris at the AI Action Summit. And I'm here with Ina Fried, who has been covering this incredible, what could you say? It's like bigger than life, right?
Yeah, I mean, what I thought was a broad summit on the various risks and challenges of AI really feels like a rah-rah boosterism for the technology. And while there's an importance in evangelizing the technology, there's a lot of avenues and places for that. There aren't that many discussions about how do we manage these big risks. And it's not just the risk of the computers taking over. It's bias, misinformation, but also jobs, income inequality, and climate. And it seemed like most of that discussion was pushed to the side.
Well, you have had a key role here, and you've interviewed all the big players. First, what about you and Sam Altman? What did he have to say about Elon Musk making a play for OpenAI?
So he thinks it's mostly a distraction. He's like, look, Elon's, you know, been proposing him getting control of OpenAI for a long time. This is, I think he called it the, you know, news feature of the week. But, you know, he said OpenAI is not for sale. You know, I think Musk is the last person he'd want to sell it to if it were. You know, I do think it puts new, fresh pressure on OpenAI. Look, ultimately, the deal to transition from a nonprofit control to a for-profit company that the nonprofit has a stake in, it was always going to be under a lot of scrutiny. Elon's just kind of stirring the pot there.
Well, OpenAI is a critical player in Stargate, the new Trump initiative, which Elon Musk tweeted about and is clearly not for. Do you think it was to try to distract from that as well, since there's been a lot of great press about their plan?
You know, I think there's no question that OpenAI is further along, both whether it's infrastructure, technology, and, you know, Sam's perspective was, if you want to compete, compete. But you're not buying us.
Okay, J.D. Vance made his global debut here. You were in the room. Tell us about it.
Well, I wasn't in the room. I was actually talking to Sam. But I did, you know, hear a lot of what he said. And look, I think it's very clear that the focus of this new administration when it comes to AI is how do we lead? How do we stay ahead of China? And then also some of the other themes that we're hearing from the administration broadly. They don't like content moderation unless it's them doing it. So I think, you know, you can expect to see a lot of boosting of U.S. companies and a lot less regulation. Not that there was much regulation at the federal level to begin with.
Well, President Macron kept saying, it's about France, it's about Europe, it's about France, it's about Europe. And then J.D. Vance hit the stage, the vice president, and said, it's about America. America's clearly the leading company when it comes to AI. Did you learn anything this week that led you to believe that things would change in Europe?
Look, I think France has some big players, Mistral and others. I think they want to build on that. I think they want to carve out a niche. I don't think they're going to rival the U.S. and China, but that doesn't mean they can't play an important role. And I think a lot of this conference for France was a chance to say, we're a serious player here. They announced a bunch of initiatives, some of which had €1 million after it, some of which are in the billions, and I think they want to be taken seriously.
Prime Minister Modi of India was the co-host, and he spoke today as well, and he said that they're going to do the next AI summit, whatever that may be. What did you think about his comments overall?
Look, I think, again, everyone recognizes this is a big shift. The people that want to lead or want to take part are trying to grab the headlines, but also the mindshare, the investment. And I think, you know, India is a huge and growing tech player, and I think they would certainly want to be seen in the same space as the other leaders.
Vice President J.D. Vance made his debut on this global stage. What did you think about his announcements? And can you give us a little insight, if you have any, about how he got along with the other world leaders?
Well, I don't know how well he got along, but certainly his message was very consistent with what the Trump administration has been saying, which is our strategy around AI is to encourage American leadership. I think that came out loud and clear. And part of what that means is less regulation, although we don't have that much regulation at the federal level to begin with. But they certainly don't like regulation. They don't like content moderation unless it's them sort of putting their thumbs on the scale, but not sort of outside players. I think we're going to see a big battle there shaping up over who gets to decide what these engines say. Because, you know, the past content moderation was really around what do Facebook and others allow others to say. With AI, they're answering the questions for themselves. And I've actually been expecting for a long time a debate in the U.S. over how do these chatbots answer different questions that Americans are deeply divided on along partisan lines.
There's also a big conversation about sustainability at these models. This is the first time I've heard anyone talk about sustainability, and we don't even know where they're coming from, right?
Well, I mean, obviously these technologies are using a lot of energy. Right now, they're adding to the climate problem. There's a lot of happy talk around, you know, maybe AI will help us solve the climate crisis, but for now, it's adding to it. I don't think there's been a lot of focus on that broadly. And even here in Paris, I feel like it was a secondary topic. Where you did hear a lot of conversation was France is in a unique position. They generate more power than they use because of nuclear, because of sustainables. And I think they want to be seen as a place that can house data centers because they have that extra capacity.
President Macron said, it's not drill, baby, drill here. He said, it's plug, baby, plug.
Yeah, and they have this unique position. I mean, most people are trying to figure out where they're going to get the power for these data centers. France is like, we got the power, we want the data centers.
Not to step into this global analysis mode, but in all the side conversations here, I'm sure you heard it too, it's all about pushing France and pushing the European countries to do more in AI and get more investment. What do you see the problem in Europe?
Well, you know, it's easy to blame regulation, and that's usually what happens when you ask, why isn't Europe bigger, et cetera. I do think it's regulation, but it's the culture that surrounds the regulation. I think a lot of great companies, including great AI companies, start in Europe, start in France, start in Berlin, start in Munich, start elsewhere. It is still really hard to grow your company. And so a lot of companies start here and move elsewhere.
President Macron announced $109 billion investment in Europe. Do you think it's going to make that big a difference to really deal with the issues that you're talking about?
I think it depends when that money comes, what it's used for. You know, the number sounds big. That was the goal, is to have a big number, and they achieved that. Not really clear what it's being used for, over how much time. You know, the U.S. is going to get lots of investment over whatever time frame we're talking about. I don't think it's going to position France above the U.S. or China, or even come close to rivaling. But I do think it's significant in terms of where is the next set of investments going. You know, everyone wants to compete with Silicon Valley. That's probably not going to happen. But there's a lot of room for other cities and other countries to be important.
Do you think that startups that were here were helped by these conversations, or does it make any difference?
I think it's a big moment for the French ecosystem. We're here right now in this incubator, Station F. There's a lot of companies here that want more investment and attention. I think if the summit accomplished anything, it was certainly drawing attention to France's startup ecosystem and to its global ambitions.
I have to say, last night we were at the Foreign Ministry, that beautiful palace, and it was so great to watch you work as the OpenAI Elon Musk story. You were working 24/7. This industry has never been as hot. Are you taking a break after this?
No, my family is ready for me to pitch in at home. You know, I do think, to your point, though, this really is the fastest. I've been covering Silicon Valley for 25 years. This is the fastest I've seen a new technology emerge. Everyone points to the mobile revolution or dot-com. the technology pace actually wasn't that fast. The technology pace is torrid right here.
All right, one more question. China. China was here in the House. Do you have any reporting on any of the meetings that took place between the French and the Chinese or anyone else?
Well, the Chinese did sign the statement. I mean, the biggest consequential thing in terms of agreeing on policy, China signed and the U.S. and the U.K. didn't. In terms of the, you know, bilateral nature of it all, look, I don't know that the politics are shifting that much. China has a pretty clear strategy, and I don't think it changed here.
Thank you so much, Ina. Ina Fried, she's the best reporter in technology here at the AI Action Summit. This is enough action for both of us, right?
Thanks, Tammy. Definitely. I'm ready for a rest.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Hi, Sam. Thanks for being with us in Paris today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I see you're wearing a little red rooster. It's going to make a lot of people from the French tech community really happy, I think. But what film, movie, or personal experience influenced your vision of tech?
The first thing that, this is a more recent film, but I so strongly recommend it, Apollo 11 is like one of the most inspirational movies for tech and doing hard engineering projects and discovering science I've ever seen. I super strongly recommend it.
Great, thanks for the advice. I love this movie too. Okay, so you're talking about Apollo 11 and the future of tech. We're obviously at the moment where everything accelerates so fast when it comes to AI. We hear you talk a lot about AGI. Can you tell us a little bit more about what's your vision, how AI is developing at the moment?
You know, for a long time I tried to stop using the word AGI because I think it, at this point, means something different to everybody or several things to the same people, but it's just like so deep in there that it, I have not been able to stop using it. At this point, I think it just, most people use it to mean like really strong, powerful AI systems. And we're clearly making fast progress. So I think you can argue about different definitions and then different times of when we'll get there. But if you look at what the systems are capable of today versus what they were capable of 2 years ago and project that forward even 2 more years, to say nothing of 4 or 6, this is like really quite something. We launched something called Deep Research. We lost track of time. I think it was like a week ago. And, you know, that's like a model that I think is capable of doing like a single digit, low single digit percentage of all of the tasks in the economy in the world right now, which is a crazy statement. And a year ago, I don't think something that people thought was going to be coming. So again, if you project that forward, it'll keep moving.
What are the next big milestones that you anticipate?
I am generally excited just to continue to push on the model's reasoning capability, the ability to use that to then go do hard, complex, long horizon agentic tasks. Agents that can write software engineers are one thing that we're particularly excited about. And then longer term, AI that can do science, I think will be one of the most important impacts. You know, if we can have an AI system that can write code, that certainly helps the world a lot. But if we have an agent that can go autonomously discover a cure for cancer or get fusion to work or discover new physics, like, I think scientific progress is what drives the world to such a strong extent that that's a huge deal.
Would you say that the use cases that are exciting for you the most at the moment?
This is like a very general answer, but I realized over the last couple of months that I don't use a lot of services that I used to use. Like, I don't do Google searches anymore, unless I'm like, there may be some very specific thing, but not that much.
They still have a big market share, though.
For sure. There's like a lot of other tasks that I used to go somewhere else to do. And the fact that I can use ChatGPT as this sort of like general thing throughout the whole day, and just have this like oracular system that can sort of do anything within reason, anything that I kind of need, is like, we were not there a year ago. And the fact that we are there now, I've really noticed a shift in my usage.
Completely. And what do you tell, I mean, we have a lot of people working in different businesses here, and obviously everyone talks about AI. When you ask our CEOs and friends, like, what's their top priority, 8 out of 10 would say implementing AI. But then when you look at like how actually it gets implemented, only like 4 CEOs out of 10 have actually done the work and really implemented at scale. What's your advice to everyone trying to get in this race and you know, really get advantage from the technology?
I think there's, I mean, at least two really good directions to go on this. Vice President Vance said a lot of things that I really liked, but one of them, a point that he hit a few times, was just the scale of the economic opportunity. He used the phrase lightning in a bottle, and I really think it is this moment. I think it was like a great phrase, and it is this moment that I've never seen before. Maybe it was like this at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, maybe it was like this at the beginning of the internet, but the economic impact this can have, you know, to go back to the deep research example, the idea that you have for 50 cents of compute, you can do like $500 or $5,000 of work. Companies that are implementing that to just be way more efficient, I think you'll see this in a big way with the software engineering agent. That's category one, so companies can just run way better. People can do way more with way less. And then the second is building consumer-facing or business-facing products that use AI in this very fundamental way. And, you know, ChatGPT is one example of that. A lot of other companies have done great stuff there. I think people should be imagining more than they are. I think a lot of people are still thinking about like last year's AI, which was just much more limited. And what you can do now is like really quite remarkable.
And how do you start when you're like looking at all those tools and you don't necessarily know where to go?
So before doing this, I used to be a startup investor. I ran this firm called Y Combinator. And the kind of people would ask versions of this question all the time. You know, what should I build? What should I do with my company? What product should I go? Like, how do I? And I think that's a question you should never take someone else's advice on. Startups succeed to the idea they do something that, like, no one has quite figured out before. Maybe no one's thought of before, no one's executed well before. But I always encourage people to trust their own instincts and not take someone else's advice there.
I think it's a great advice. So we're in France. You've opened an office in France, like, not so long ago. And you've also written an amazing piece in one of our newspapers talking about how France is really great. We're grateful to that. Can you tell us more about like how you're thinking about France and the AI ecosystem here? And I know you've just returned from London. Maybe a comparison between the ecosystems would also be helpful.
Speaking of how I use ChatGPT and working on that piece, it is so good at translation, I think, relative to any other thing I've ever used before.
I didn't use ChatGPT to translate, by the way.
You didn't? No. Okay. Well, if you do, you know, we'll make it better and better. Look, I've been here to Station F many times, and back in my Y Combinator days, I always used to particularly love coming here. We had a special relationship with France. We funded many, many great French entrepreneurs, and obviously France has got a long history of incredible engineering. I think it's so cool that, like, there's one country that makes airplanes and trains and nuclear power plants and all of these things that are so core to the vision of the future and does it so, so well. So I think it's just always special in Paris. London is great too. I had a wonderful time there. But the sort of the engineering talent, the entrepreneurial spirit here, the belief in energy, which I think is going to become super important as we continue on this AI journey. Like, France has got a lot of advantages.
What's your plan with the office in Paris?
We'd like to expand it a lot. Again, speaking of French talent, we have many great French researchers at OpenAI. There are many others that live here that we would love to contribute to OpenAI, so I think we'll have a great office here.
Great. So, lots of interesting opportunities for people here. Okay, Sam, I can't conclude this interview without asking you this question that you've probably heard all day. Is OpenAI for sale?
No. OpenAI has a mission. We are an unusual organization, and we have this mission of making AGI benefit all of humanity. And we are here to do that. We are not for sale.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
So here's a point that you heard me say many times, which is that open source AI must win. And the reason it must win is that AI, first of all, many of you are a startupper. How many of you are building on top of open source software? Okay, that's a lot of people. How many of you are building on top of Llama?
Very few.
Awesome. Wonderful. So you know that open source must win because it is the foundation of an entire industry. And we know from the history of the internet, for example, that ultimately any platform, software platform, needs to be open source. There is a big pressure from the market for it to become open source. And it's because it's more secure, it's more high performance, it's more flexible, it's more portable, it's cheaper to run. We all know the advantages of this, right? But there is a big one also for AI, which is that in the near future, every single one of our interaction with the digital world is going to be mediated by AI systems. And we need a high diversity of AI systems, because if we get all of our information through AI systems, we need a diverse population of AI systems, for the same reason we need a diverse population of journals and newspapers and magazines, right? We also need all those systems to speak every language in the world, to understand every culture, every value system, every center of interest. And no single entity in the world, as big as it is, can train a system to do this. First of all, because nobody has access to all of the cultural data that is available in the world. And also, most countries and most regions in the world want to preserve some level of sovereignty on their data. So they're not going to share all of their cultural data. So the future I see, which is the next stage in open source AI, is a future in which AI systems will constitute a kind of repository of all human knowledge, and they will be trained in a distributed, federated fashion with contributions from different entities, different data centers around the world. They're not going to be exchanging data, they're going to be exchanging parameter vectors. Okay, so imagine a future where every region in the world has access to their own data. They contribute to training a global model using their own data center, and then periodically they exchange parameter vectors with everyone else. And so in the end, what we have is a gigantic model that knows everything about everything, but nobody has exchanged any data, so everyone sort of preserves some control over the data. There is no, you know, issues of people getting data from, you know, regions that don't want to share it. So that's the future I see. I think we need to build it. And that's kind of very interesting future. And for this to happen, we need to have governments on our side. We need them to be very careful not to regulate open source out of existence. I think we're kind of winning that battle, okay? There was some time, maybe in the last year or two, where people who are really worried about the intrinsic risk of AI, which I think are completely overblown, convince governments to perhaps regulate AI so that, which would have essentially made open source AI illegal. And I think we are past that point. And one of the things, I think one of the lessons of the AI summit today is that it has much more of a positive view than the summit that took place at Bletchley Park in the UK last year. Okay, so now, important question. I'm a scientist after all. When are we gonna get human-level AI? Do we need human-level AI? Yes, because we're gonna walk around with those smart glasses, and we're gonna need to have sort of human-level AI systems that we can, so we can talk to them. Those glasses don't have a display, but within the next year or so, we're gonna have glasses with displays, and with EMG interfaces, so we can like point and click with our fingers, type with our hands in our pocket, things like that. And you know, pretty soon that's gonna be the new computing platform, and it's enabled by AI. And then, you know, in a few years, we'll have like full augmented reality glasses, but right now that's too expensive. So in the future, all of us will be walking around with basically a virtual staff of super smart virtual people helping us in our daily lives. It's like every one of us would be kind of a boss of a staff of people, right? All of us would be sort of a manager, if you want, right? That sounds either exciting or horrible, depending on what you think. But that's going to amplify everyone's intelligence and efficiency and creativity and productivity. So the big question now is a technical one. How long is it going to take for us to produce systems that have human-level intelligence? And this is the kind of stuff that we work on at FAIR, which is the fundamental AI research lab of Meta, spread over 7 different sites across North America and Europe, about 500 scientists and engineers. And we're working on the next generation AI systems beyond LLMs. Okay, so first thing is, there's no question that at some point in the future, we'll have systems that have human-level intelligence and beyond. No question. It's going to take a while. It's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen 2 years from now. 2 years from now, we might have systems that, for narrow domains, have, you know, superhuman abilities. But there are still major challenges to overcome. We need AI systems that understand the physical world, have persistent memory, are capable of reasoning, and capable of planning. And basically, LLMs, as they stand today, are completely incapable of any of those things, are only capable of very sort of elementary versions of it, despite all the hoopla about reasoning models, blah, blah, blah. Okay? So that's the stuff that we're working on. We think we're going to have a good idea of whether we're on a good path within 3 to 5 years, something like that. And then after that, it's going to take a while to figure out how to make those things smart enough so that they attain human intelligence. The key question is going to be, at what point do we have systems that are as smart as a cat? Because, okay, we have LLMs, they can pass the bar exam, they can solve equations, they can compute integrals, but we've had computers to do this for a while. We don't have machines that are as smart as a cat. We don't have machines. We don't have domestic robots, we don't have completely autonomous self-driving cars, and that's because we don't have technology to make AI systems understand the physical world. That's what needs to be done, and then we'll have systems that have common sense, and we have solved human-level intelligence. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you.
My name is Tammy Haddad. I'm here at Station F. This is the sixth day, the last day of the AI Action Summit, and I'm so glad to have Melina Orito here with me today. She's on the board of Women in Leadership in Europe. Welcome.
Nice to meet you and nice to be here.
So tell me what you're doing here at the summit.
Yes, well, I am here to, first of all, to capture all what is happening, and it is great to be here to see all the new things that are popping up, and also as a board member of European Women in Leadership, I am here to exchange with my colleagues on fair and sustainable AI and how we get to it.
Well, you know what? We'll get to the story of how so much of AI was created by women and also women in Europe. We're going to get to that in a minute. But an announcement was made about sustainability. Can you talk about sustainability and AI? Because this is a new conversation, but I know it's not new to you.
Yeah, of course. This is the, I would say, the essential point what we are discussing about right now. And on the sustainability for AI is, on my point of view, we can distinguish 2 points. The first one is energy. We know that the AI models are very hungry in energy during the learning process. And it is very important to have like sustainable sources of energy. And on this point of view, France is very well positioned because we have very decarbonated energy in France.
Well, also, you're a leader in the whole world in nuclear. You're a leader in the whole world in nuclear.
Absolutely. France is the leader of nuclear energy in the world. And this is why President Macron announced a big, big, big data center that will be built near the sources of nuclear energy, because we have to be near the sources and we have also to have the good connections to the grid. So energy will be a a big issue for AI and learning models. So this is the first point. We have a second point, which is much more complicated, I would say, which is the sustainability of the data we are nourishing our AIs all around the world. And let me take an example first. When at the beginning the social media, when they began, they just wanted to nourish their business, and they had algorithms to capture our attention. So at the beginning it was quite good. But then they noticed that they were capturing better our attention if the algorithms were pushing hate speeches and division. And where we arrived? We arrived at an internet that is today very, very divided, with a lot of conspiration theories, and that is in a way threatening democracy where democracy yet exists. So I want to say with that that the point where we begin is just a point, but then we have a whole road, and technology, new technology, brings us new elements that we will discover all around the process. And this is why we have to discuss that at every step, and even more for artificial intelligence, that is a bigger disruptor than the former technology.
I was at a breakfast this morning where a very famous technologist said, people know that what they're looking at on social media or artificial intelligence could potentially be wrong, incorrect, fake. That there's an awareness now that it is fake, sort of implying that that means it's not a problem. Sounds like you don't disagree.
Oh, no, I...
Sounds like you don't agree.
No, I don't agree. You can see that people stay more and more on the social media. They are more and more divided, and we have less possibility to discuss between the different points of view. You can see it in all the democratic countries. We have more difficulties to agree because of all this information that is not truth, it's just information. And as Yuval Harari said it, it's very easy to create information. It's very costly to create truth because you have to spend money, to spend time, to spend energy to find the truth. But to create fiction is very easy. So this is one of the problems.
So one of the things that President Macron talked about is the dominance of United States and all the big tech companies, which we're looking at them behind you. You've got Google, you've got Amazon, you've got Meta. They're all right here in Station F. But there's also this feeling that you can't scale in Europe. And part of the motivating factors, I think, for this AI summit is to change that. And I heard a lot of technologists from Europe talking about, we've got to get going. And President Macron said, we're in a hurry. He said, plug, baby, plug. What do you think needs to be done?
Yeah, I like plug, baby, plug, I have to say. Well, more seriously, as a technology is very new, we will have disruption in every step. We have seen, all of us, DeepSeek last week. Now we have Mistral AI that is faster than ChatGPT. So every day we will see something. It reminds me in the years 2000 when we had the bubble of dot-coms, and every day something was happening. So we are at this point. It means that the technology will be adapted everywhere. Changes will come, but also that the transformation, the real transformation process to increase productivity and even more to improve people's lives is long. I had the chance as a minister of innovation in a small country, in Albania, to lead this process of transformation for just the digital technology, which was very mature at this point in time. And yet it took really 10 years just to transform the administration. The technology was there, but to lead the transformation on all the public administration, on the people minds, it takes time. So it will take time, and this goes in the favor of a sustainable AI, and I think Europe can catch up.
Do you look at any country or any company and think, wow, they're really doing it the right way? They've considered safety, they've considered their responsibility. Is there anyone you want to point to and say they're really doing it well?
Well, I think it's a bit early. We have to understand more what is happening. Well, I have to say it is better when we have open algorithms because we can check what they are doing. But I'll take another example. It will be quite difficult in the sense that we know that we have like 2% of people that believe that Earth is flat. How we do for these people not to believe that? It's like impossible. And it will be even more difficult with algorithms in the sense that they will do what the data we give to them will tell them to do. So if someone wants an algorithm to say something that is wrong, it will be very easy. And this is all about sustainable AI and how we will do everything we can to control what AI will do in favor of the humankind and not for some people.
You know, when you say control and AI, it makes me laugh a little.
Well, it will be difficult, I have to say. It is difficult today with disinformation networks. But this is, well, if we say we'll do nothing, I think we are all bad. So we have to do something.
And you think France gets a boost or all of Europe gets a boost after this conference?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I hope it will be more investment in infrastructure for AI and a better ecosystem for innovation, yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tammy.
This is the Washington AI Network. We've gone global, and we hope you'll subscribe. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.